I am speaking with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Absolutely.
Let's start off with General Motors. You plan to hold some hearings with the Energy and Commerce Committee on the recall of more than 1.5 million vehicles because of ignition switch issues. What do you want to get at? What do you want to find out?
Well, we want to find out what happened. And, you know, this really dates back to when I chaired the oversight subcommittee back with the Ford Firestone issue, you know, 10, 15 years ago now. And here was a case at two great Michigan companies, two real pioneers in American manufacturing, best of friends,
married into the families.
And tragically, we saw, I want to say there's nearly, I think there are 179 deaths. And both sides fingered each other, and we had to get to the bottom of it. And in fact, we found out that there was tire flaws, which created the trouble. And it impacted lots of folks, undermined the credibility of two fine companies, all of that. But we had a role. It was bipartisan. And we had a role to figure out what happened. And once we did, we knew that we wanted to come back with corrective legislation so it could not happen again. And that's frankly our MO for all of the fraud and abuse stuff that we go after. And there's a lot. Cylinder was another issue in the last Congress. Identify the problem, come back and try to correct it so it doesn't happen again. And with Ford and Firestone, we passed the Upton bill, the TREAD Act, which has a whole number of new requirements. So any new car sold in America after 2007, you now have on your dashboard a tire monitor. It talks about the pressure. If you got a pressure's down, you're going to have an alert that's there. We know that has saved lots of lives in terms of that device, which obviously doesn't cost very much either. But we also said when a car company knows that they've got problems, that they have 5 working days to get it into the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA is the acronym. For them to compile and figure out where it's going to go. And so you got, and this is the government watchdog over the industry. And
that didn't happen in this case.
And we increased the fines, and we included criminal violations. So it's not just Mother Earth, you know, the company that's going to pay off. If the individuals themselves, if they deceive the administrators, they actually can go to jail. That's pretty tough. And we thought it worked. It was bipartisan, passed overwhelmingly in the Congress, got it through the Senate. And so here we are now. We got a new issue, 12, 13 deaths, not quite sure. Number of airbag problems as well. Over 300 is what I understand may or may not be related. It's one of the things that we're going to try to find out. We've asked some tough questions of both GM and NHTSA, and those answers are due next week. Same questions. We want to know what was sent forward, you know, when, who looked at it, what was, you know, why did it take so long? It wasn't 5 days, wasn't even 5 years. It was, you know, really dating back to almost 2001 when the first cases were put out. So GM, to their credit, I talked to the CEO, Mary Barra, earlier this week. She absolutely confirmed, offered to participate in the hearing that we're likely to have the first or second week in April. We're not quite sure yet. NHTSA obviously will be there as well. And we're going to try to get to the bottom of it. And then we'll, once we get some answers, and by the way, both NHTSA and GM have shared a lot of thoughts with our staff. We had a working meeting last week and again this week. Toyota, as you know, just paid a record fine. I want to say it was almost $1.2 billion because of the issue with their with the floor mat issue that was there. Recalled, of course, from a few years ago. But we want to get to the bottom of it, and then we'll examine whether or not we need more legislation like what we passed with the TREAD Act to try and make sure that it does not happen again. To the credit of GM, they have a new vice president now in charge of auto safety, an engineer, so, you know, the right type of qualifications to do that. And I think that was a good step. But, you know, we want to get to the bottom of it and see where it takes us.
If this, in fact, does go back over a decade and went undetected, how concerned are you that this is not the only case out there, that there are other safety issues, perhaps not at General Motors, but at other car companies, which have flown under the radar?
Well, that's a question that we'll ask. I mean, what is it that triggers NHTSA to figure out whether or not they should be seeking more information to ask for a recall. You know, we had an issue, I want to say it was 2 years, within the last 2 years, involved Jeep and their gas tanks. Well, I think there was a partial recall, but what they ended up doing was they put an extra little layer of protection there on that, I want to say it was a side gas tank, and that was putting a trailer hitch on, which, again, that's an added, you know, big piece of metal that provided more protection, which NHTSA agreed was sufficient in terms of gas tank explosions. So, you know, we'll figure this out and we'll see where it takes us.
Article in the Christian Science Monitor Wednesday said if the company is found criminally negligent for an alleged cover-up dating back over a decade, the terms of its federal bankruptcy, including a provision shielding the company from any liability from lawsuits filed before it went bankrupt, may be called into question. As someone who was heavily involved in the whole process of getting some government guarantee and allowing General Motors to survive more or less in 08 and 09, how concerned are you about what this means for the future of the company?
Well, you know, a couple of things. We don't know exactly where, you know, a lot of this happened under the old GM. They received bankruptcy protection, which is something that a good number of companies across the country do receive. The rules, I think, are pretty much the same. I'm not a lawyer, but I think they're pretty much the same for everyone. But, of course, they came out of bankruptcy. They're the new GM. The question is, are there cases since then under the new GM? So I'd say it's probably a little, you know, it's a little bit unclear. But obviously something that will be explored. I know that the New York attorney, U.S. attorney, has filed, I think, criminal charges here. Obviously, they'll have to comply with the law. But I guess you could say there are really two different companies, the old and the new, and during the – actually, maybe three, and then the period that they were in bankruptcy when a federal judge held us. So I'm not sure exactly what the answer will be, but I know that that will be explored in the weeks ahead.
What does this say about overall regulatory environment in the United States if this did, in fact, go on for over 10 years?
Well, you know what? The products that we buy, we want to be safe. We know that there's not a big margin of error. We're all traveling 70, 75 miles an hour on the interstates. We know what happens when, you know, something happens, texting, hitting another vehicle, that type of thing. It's not a good result. But we want to make sure that when, in fact, defects are and flaws are identified. In this case, it could be that it was just a $2 or $5 fix would have solved the problem. And what breaks your heart? I mean, there was a report on CBS a week or so ago, and they interviewed a family, and they identified the car. The car was driving, and all of a sudden it just stopped. It went from on to, you know, off or accessory position. And there wasn't an accident or whatever, but they took the car in and indicated that that was a problem, and the car was returned. Allegedly, it was checked out. The next day, they lost their daughter. She was driving that car. That's not what we want to see happen. When you have a number of cases like this, and, you know, again, the airbag issue is another issue. You know, technically, when that key goes from on to accessory, the airbag's still supposed to work. It's designed to do that, probably required to do that. So why are there, you know, question asked, why are there more than 300 airbag incidences if, in fact, that same type of thing happened? We don't know, but we want to know that that car that we all purchase, whether it's $15,000 or $40,000, you know, whatever it is going to work, and that we're going to be safe, our spouse is going to be safe, our kids are going to be safe, our neighbors are going to be safe. And, you know, I think we should demand nothing less than that.
Let me ask you about the Ukraine. President Obama has said that he's not going to consider military options here. Should military options be on the table?
I don't think so. I for one, at least with the information that I have, and I missed the president's announcement on Thursday morning, I guess it was now, I don't think it's right for us to think about sending troops on the boots on the ground, as they say. And I would say that of my colleagues, there are very few, if any, maybe there's probably some, that really think that that ought to be an option. That's not the case. But I do believe that, and as we have heard from, you know, other Eastern European countries, Estonia, Czech Republic, Lithuania, Poland, Ukraine too, we know that where Putin has a huge threat over Eastern Europe is they supply most, if not all, of the natural gas that they use to heat their homes and, you know, a whole number of different things in that region of the world. And already, just in the last week or two, Russia has terminated the discount, I guess you could say, that Ukraine was getting. So prices rise dramatically, sends a real shudder to all of those nations in terms of what may happen. And one of our best responses, I think, and the New York Times talked about this as well just in an editorial a week or so ago, was the possibility that we change the way that we approve liquid natural gas, LNG exports, to instead, you know, up to this point, really sit in the bureaucracy where the Department of Energy studies them and maybe every 3 or 4 months approves one. They've got more than two dozen or so sitting on their desks now. Change the standard from allowing DOE to be involved from most favored nation status, and that's a real select group of nations, and expand that to WTO nations, World Trade Organization. Obviously, we're a member of WTO. Ukraine is not an MFN nation, but they are WTO. If all of a sudden we can expedite these types of exports to other WTO nations, frankly, I think that an argument could be made if we don't, it's actually a violation of WTO, but that's another argument for another day. But if you change that standard, we could actually expedite the process of what is taking years to approve these to hopefully at least a matter of months in terms of getting them off the Department of Energy's desks and allowing the process then to work with the other agencies, which literally is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars per application. But it sends the signal to Russia that we're going to be serious about this. We're not going to, you know, so far, at least some of the sanctions that I've seen, they've restricted bank accounts for, I want to say, 10 people. Well, big deal. You send the signal that we're going to start exporting LNG to our friends in the WTO, and you take that chokehold that the Russians now have over some of those nations, bingo, I think we're in a lot better position to at least get their attention and provide some relief and tell our allies that we're serious about stepping in to help. But sending boots on the ground, no, I don't think that's an option, and I think you'll have World War III pretty quick.
The New York Times had a story on the idea of exporting natural gas, said that even if the Energy Department approves all the pending permits from companies seeking to export natural gas, the fuel could not begin flowing overseas for at least a few years. Most American natural gas export terminals are in the early stages of construction.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right. It doesn't happen overnight. I mean, let's look at Keystone. 2,000 days that's been sitting at the administration's Secretary of State. But this sends a signal. I mean, but right now, DOE, Department of Energy, has these bottled up. And by you're going to see us in our committee. We have bipartisan legislation that was introduced about a week ago, H.R. 6. I'm a co-sponsor. We've got a lot of co-sponsors already. It's bipartisan. We're going to have a hearing on this in the next couple of weeks. We're going to move it out of committee, i.e. approve it. And I'd like to think that that'll be on the House floor before the end of next month, before the end of April. Again, at least from the Congress's perspective, it sends a signal, at least in the House. I don't know where the administration stands on this legislation yet. Yes, it will take a couple years to get done. It also will take billions of dollars of construction and everything else. That's jobs. It's domestic jobs here. But it maybe will stop the advance of Russian forces as we've seen them move westward in the last week.
in the short term, are the sanctions the best option?
The sanctions that the president indicated?
Yes.
On 10 people?
What else would you do?
Well, I'd ask the Congress. So we did pass $1 billion. Now, remember, when this started, the market went down hundreds of points that Monday or Tuesday. To the credit of Ed Royce, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, he helped fashion legislation, worked around the clock, bipartisan legislation, to provide a loan guarantee to the Ukrainians. Obviously, they pay it back. This is beyond the IMF. But we passed it in the House with only 23 members voting no, overwhelmingly approved in the House. Senate hasn't taken action yet. If I was the president on this, you ask me, I'd say it's time to tell Congress, Senate in this case, get to work. Do what the House has done. And if we need additional steps, like it looks like we do, well, you know, since then, I mean, remember, this has been at least 2 weeks now festering. We do need to send the signal to not only the Ukraine but to our allies that we're going to step in and help. And I'm going to I would ask the Congress to move forward on trying to expedite the approval of LNG exports so we can stick up for our friends.
Okay. On the subject of sanctions, though, how broad do you make these? Because one of the problems with sanctions sometimes gets to be that you're affecting people, you know, the poorest people, perhaps.
In terms of other sanctions, I think that it's important. I want to say I think this is happening. The president is asked other nations, France, Germany, others. I believe that there's a G7 meeting in the next couple of days to see what the rest of Europe is doing, because we need to be on that same page. And the only way that sanctions work, it's not just the United States. It has to be more than unilateral. It has to be multinational. And I think it's very important to get the input and participation of our allies in the region too. And I would like to think, and I do think, that that is starting to happen literally in the next couple of days as well.
Isn't there some evidence, though, that this is having some economic impact in Russia? Their markets have been
down. Their markets crashed at least the first week. I haven't seen in the last couple of days what's happened. But again, the pressure seems to be being elevated by Putin. And, you know, we'll see what happens next in the Ukraine. But it's a very unsettling position right now.
Holland Sentinel, moving on to another subject, immigration, quoted you speaking at the West Coast Chamber of Commerce luncheon earlier this week, saying that you believe that immigration reform can still pass.
I do.
Yet this year. How deep into the game are we in the fourth quarter here?
Well, we are, you know, we have still a number of months in this legislative session. A number of primaries now have happened. We had a big one in Texas a couple weeks ago. Earlier this week, we had the Illinois primary, and we don't have any more primaries, I think, until the first week in May. We've got a primary in early June, a number of states, including Virginia. Why is that important? Because that's where the chairman of the Judiciary Committee is. He also has a primary. So I think once we get beyond those, there is a window where we can, I hope, move bipartisan legislation on a number of fronts that you and I have talked about before, whether it be border security or taking care of the Dreamers, work permits, a whole number of different things, and pass them with bipartisan support, avoid a conference with the Senate. That's simply not going to happen, a conference with the Senate bill. The president, as well as some leading Senate Democrats, have said in recent weeks that they're optimistic that that can happen. So am I. I'm a Cubs fan. It's not going to happen this year, as we know, but the glass is always half full. But ultimately, we have to deal with the issue because it is a broken system. And the longer we perpetuate this, the longer we do nothing, only perpetuates a system that works for nobody. Employers, families, a whole host of different issues, it needs to be resolved. And I believe that there is the bipartisan support to fix this. We've just got to find the right timing. And that timing still is available this year, and I hope that it can take place.
There have been some conservative commentators who have said that while the Senate bill that was passed is not perfect, it's better than what we currently have. Wouldn't the quickest path to getting something to the president be the House passed the bill that got through the Senate?
You know, you could make the argument that it's better than doing nothing. But has anyone really read that 2,000-page bill? Something tells me no.
Isn't any immigration bill going to be roughly 2,000 pages?
Well, no. Actually, what we're talking about in the House is, in essence, have a series of what I call rifle shot bills that really try to address and fix certain problems. So a bill – so as an example, a bill that's already got out of been approved by the Homeland Security Committee on border security. Every Democrat voted for it. Every Republican voted for it. It's Candace Miller's bill. She's from Michigan, former Secretary of State from the Thumb area. And I'll tell you, I was in a meeting about a year ago or so. Rubio, Marco Rubio, senator from Florida, is his Senate bill. He was talking about some of the things that his bill did. She was – or the chairman of that committee. I don't know that Candace was in the meeting, but the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee was in. He outlined what Candace's bill was. And Rubio said on the spot, he said, you know, I think that's a better bill than what we have, better provisions in terms of setting benchmarks, establishing that, in fact, border security reforms are in place and they're working, really have a matrix to try and show that was a stronger bill than them. So, you know, if we can pass a bill in the House with what I think would be 240, 250 votes, maybe it'll get more than that, that's bipartisan – the Senate ought to be able to take that. I know the president would be willing to take it too. That may be indeed a faster approach than pass a couple of House bills. You go to conference. You go through this filibuster thing that they have in the Senate, all of that. Who knows if you ever get an agreement on this massive bill, and it's somewhat of a chaos.
But if
there's a faster route to do it if we can get these bills up and out the door in the House.
Okay. I guess the one thing I wonder is if you're doing these bills individually, is there the danger that one side looks at the other and says, you're going to pass the ones you like and not
Well, that's why you do border security first. I mean, you have a queue on these. You put them out. You get them done. You know that the president's going to sign probably the border security first. But, you know, you got them in a queue and bing, 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 off they go. And you deal with these things.
But as you said, it's got to be bipartisan.
It won't happen unless it's bipartisan.
Congressman Fred Upton, as always, thank you for your time.
Thanks.